Today's Teisho will be on Soju's verses on Oryu's three barriers, which is the concluding portion of the Mumonkan, the Umenkwan. Soju's verses on Oryu's three barriers, and here they are. How are my hands like the Buddha's hands? How are my hands like the Buddha's hands? Feeling for the pillow at the back of my head, I gave involuntarily a loud laugh to find that my entire body is all originally hand. How are my legs like a donkey's legs? Before stepping out, I am already moving on, stalking freely all over the four seas, facing backward astride Yogi's three-legged creature. Everybody has his own karma relation. Each expresses his original nature before his thoughts arise. Nada broke his own bones and gave them back to his father. Did the fifth ancestor have a father? The Buddha's hands, the donkey's legs, the karma relation. Not the Buddha, not the way, not Zen. No wonder the Mumonkan is so steep. It elicits the deepest animosity among monks. Mumon recently at Zuigan Temple gave his lectures and judged ancient and modern masters. He cut off all thought of people and sages, and dragons arose roaring from their hibernation. So I want to thank everybody for doing a really wonderful job this morning in the Zendo. We have those three continuous sits in the morning without any break. And even though, you know, it's day five, Sesshin, and for some people day three, some people day two, and so on, you know, three sits like that on top of a prior day of sitting, that's a lot of meditation. And, you know, if you were here last night and you got up this morning, it's probably the case that your legs hurt already when you got up. When you did the sutras, when we did the sutras in the morning, they were probably hurting before we even got to the three sits. And yet, you know, we have been doing, as a community, we have been doing Sesshin for something like 25 years. And those morning sits are the most amazing thing, because you have a whole room full of people, or in this case, a virtual room full of people, sitting absolutely still for three periods. And, you know, that the depth of that samadhi is priceless. You know, it takes deep, sustained sitting to get to that place. You know, and everybody's legs hurt. You know, the Buddha's legs hurt. You know, we can imagine the Buddha as being like somebody who sat down serenely and never had any discomfort. But actually, you know, the sutras don't describe it that way. The sutras say, the original Pali sutras say, that one time the Buddha was asked to speak to the parliament of his country, the Shakya Republic. And they had just built a new parliament building for the occasion. And they thought, well, since we have a new parliament, let's invite the world-honored one. This really happened. So they invited the Buddha, who by then was quite old, to give a talk as like inaugurating the new parliament hall. And the sutra says that Buddha's back hurt so much, that he had to lie down and deliver his teisho, basically lying down. And the Buddha also, when he was quite old, he had a lot of health problems. One of the sutras says that he actually is walking down the road. The Buddha would travel around, like he would do a circuit around his country, and actually several countries, and give teachings in various cities. And he actually had no permanent place of residence. He was a home leaver. He was a wandering mendicant monk. And he was on his way to Shravasti, and where he died. But he's saying to Ananda, "Oh, this poor body is falling, absolutely falling apart. It's just held together by all these bandages." So the Buddha had a body, and the Buddha's legs hurt. And when he sat, he had to practice zazen. He practiced. The Buddha was, we say of the Buddha that he was anuttara samyak sambodhi. That means completely awake without karmic remainder. If you meet people who have had daikensho, they are not anuttara samyak sambodhi. They are people who have had an awakening. They've seen the mind root. They've seen the source. They've seen enlightenment. They've seen Buddha nature face to face, but they still have karma to clean up. So the Buddha was anuttara samyak sambodhi, completely enlightened without karmic remainder, and yet the sutras tell us he got up every day and he did zazen, every day. So it takes a lot of sitting to maintain this deep samadhi, conscious deep samadhi. And in the Zendo today, everybody was clearly in samadhi, ding. Very impressive, really wonderful to see. Thank you for that. Some of you, this has worked so well, I'm just thrilled, you know. One of the things that I miss, of course, is, you know, preparing food together and so on. One of the things that there's no stopping, basically, is that because we're in the virtual world, you know, everybody has access to all this information. And you know, you probably have heard that, you know, right now cities all over the United States are in flames. That basically if you don't know the story, yet another incident of police violence has triggered riots, first in Minneapolis, but they're spreading across the United States. And apparently there was some violence in New York that people attacked the police station in Minneapolis and set it on fire. The world is literally burning. And it's possible to ask, you know, what good does this do when all of this is happening? But I think this is absolutely crucial. I don't see how a better world is possible unless people cultivate awakened mind. Unless people discover and act from their original nature, their true nature. The koan seems so crazy. There are these three questions, and we may never get past the first question, but the question is, it's like a series of questions, really, and rhyming verses. How are my hands like the Buddha's hands? Feeling for the pillow at the back of my head, I gave involuntarily a loud laugh to find my entire body all originally hand. That makes no sense, but we'll get back to it in a while, hopefully. But I want to say something first about the sutras we recite in the morning. The sutra, the first sutra. The first thing we recite is Atadipa and the Three Jewels. And Atadipa means you are the light. That's what it means. So from the Buddhist standpoint, there is no other light in the universe than the light that is you. Or you could say that is in you, but actually it's the other way around, that you are in. You are in. So Atadipa means you are the light. You might not feel like the light right now, but you are the light. Atadipa, Viharata. Basically, the idea is that you are the light, and there is no other light. And Dharma is here for you, and is your home, basically. And then we recite the three jewels. But then we recite something mysteriously called the Kanon Gyo. Kanon Gyo. This is a sutra. It's a piece of a sutra. It's chapter 25 of the Lotus Sutra in praise of the Bodhisattva of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin, Kanon, Kanon. And we recite it in a mysterious language. It's a Japanese phonetic rendering of a Chinese phonetic rendering of a Sanskrit text. So the original text is in Sanskrit, and the Chinese, instead of translating it into Mandarin, made it a phonetic, just recited, literally recited the Sanskrit words in phonetic form. And then when the Japanese took over this practice, they changed it into Japanese syllables, familiar Japanese syllables. So this doesn't really make much sense intellectually to Chinese people or to Japanese people. And by the way, any Buddhist monk or nun in Japan would have memorized this whole thing. Why don't we just recite it in English? Well, one reason we don't recite it in English is because this is a deeper language than English, because nobody understands it. You know, this is deeper than English. It's deeper than Mandarin. It's deeper than Japanese, because it doesn't have a clear meaning. The meaning is out of reach for us. And so, when we recite the sutra, partly what we're doing is trying to reach for the meaning that we can't quite get. And when we're reaching for the meaning that we can't quite get, and it's very hard to even read this, right? So we're also just trying to keep up, and I make many mistakes myself, in spite of doing this for 40 years. That's the situation. That's the practice of sutra recitation. It's like I'm asking for meaning or insight that I don't have. See? And I'm determined to keep going, even though I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm trusting the process. This is the practice of sutra recitation. I'm trusting the process, even though I don't know where it's taking me, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't get 80% of the syllables right. And this is the deep, deep practice of reciting sutras. So this is really a wonderful way to start the day, to prepare our minds for the practice of Zazen. You could say, well, why don't we just get rid of these damn sutras and just get to the meat and potatoes of Zen, the Zazen. But actually, this is Zazen too. It's so hard to get the syllables right, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't know where I'm going, but my determination builds and builds. It's sort of like you go into a sutra reciting samadhi, and as you go on, you stop reaching for meaning. And the process of reciting becomes an expression of your true nature. You know, if you recite the sutras just a little while, one day you'll just find yourself sort of swept along. You have to watch out, because, when you're swept along, you can just disregard the actual syllables. It happens to me. When I start reaching from memory, I get it wrong because I'm remembering the long, wrong phrases. But this is really very deep practice, preparatory to our meditation. And one of the things that we do when we recite the heart, I mean, that this chapter from the Lotus Sutras, you'll know, Kanzeon, Kanzeon, Kanzeon. Kanzeon is Guanyin, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. So the first thing we do in the morning is make an invocation to the Bodhisattva of compassion. And if you haven't read the Lotus Sutra, I highly recommend that you take a look at it. And much of it will seem totally unbelievable and impossible. So this is the 25th chapter. And the 25th chapter is entitled in just a second. Okay. The universal gateway of the Bodhisattva regarder of the cries of the world. Now, Avalokiteshvara, Guan Yin, Guan means to see, Guan, see, or to be aware of. And Yin basically means like sound. So basically, I might be wrong, but I think it means something like sound. Okay. So Guan Yin is the one who sees the sound, who's aware of the sound. What sound? Guan Yin is aware of the sound of people crying. And why are they crying? Because the world is on fire. See? Guan, you know, it's like this. When we do meditation practice, and we purify body, mind, and heart. So, you know, basically, we have all of these energy habits that encircle us and prevent us from acting from our true Buddha nature. And we've been talking for 4 days about energy habits and how they imprison us and how going into deep mushin frees us from our energy habits. And so what we do in a sesshin or in our daily practice is we go into mushin and we work on our koan and we begin to like dissolve one energy habit after the next, see? And it's like all of these chains are all over us. All of these ropes are tying us. And we're untying ourselves like Houdini, right? One rope at a time. We're working our way out of our bonds. And this is the wonderful and challenging. It's why even the Buddha sat every day. The Dalai Lama still does like 4 hours of meditation a day. So, you know, there's something thrilling and wonderful about the possibility that we can get out of our chains, out of our ropes. And it sesshin is challenging, but it's not that challenging. I mean, your legs hurt, but you know, after the end of 5 days, generally speaking, people feel so much better. It's like this is to breathe the air of the free air. To breathe the free air is so wonderful. To stretch your limbs and, you know, that have been bound up and to be able to walk around on the earth, not a slave, not a prisoner. You know, that's so fantastic. It's fantastic and it's amazing. So, you know, when you do this practice, you sit down on the cushion and you enter deep mushin and you begin to untie your ropes, right? You purify, we say purify, body, mind, and heart. So, you know, what that means is that inside of us there is a Buddha, trying to get out, really and truly, tied up in all these ropes, tied up in all these chains. And we're undoing the chains. And when we've undone all the chains, you know, we have what we say in Zen is Dai Kensho, Great Awakening. And then what we have to do is basically purify body, mind, and heart. It's really the work of a lifetime. So what you really are doing is, now that you have gotten in touch with the Buddha nature in yourself, you're learning how to hear in a different way, from that place of freedom and compassion. You're learning how to see in a different way, from that place of freedom and compassion. You're learning how to eat. You know, this happens to us in a small way at a sesshin. So, you know, I remember in our community in Seattle, the Seattle Zen Center, we would always have volunteer, we would have, we would call them tenzos, tienzo, cook, the cook. And people would be appointed tenzo, the cook, for the Sangha for 6 months. So you would do basically two sesshins worth of meals. And often Genki Roshi would appoint guys who had never been in a kitchen in their lives, right? And it was a disaster, generally speaking. It was like their first experience of cooking. And so what a lot of these guys did was to fall back on the same meal every time, right? So you'd get up in the morning, and actually this is what we would eat at the Seattle Zen Center for breakfast. We would have rice gruel, miso soup, some vegetables, and a pickle, kimono. But then lunch would be regular rice, miso soup, some vegetables, and kimono. Dinner, you got it, right? Rice, miso soup. So it's like every day, every day. And, you know, people would complain. You know, we would go back to our bunkhouse, and you could hear people say, oh, don't tell me. Is it rice and miso soup? You know. Day three of sesshin, I remember sitting down, and it's the same miso, and the same rice, and the same kimono, the same pickles, right? And it was heaven. It was heaven. It's like having purified body, mind, and we could say heart. This is like heavenly nectar, right? This miso on day three of sesshin is so good. You know, rice is so good. There was a Zen master named Soen Nakagawa Roshi. And Genki Roshi was very close friends with Soen Roshi. Genki Roshi trained at the same temple. And he said, in the middle of a sesshin, they were seated at the table together. And Soen Roshi was, they all had their bowls of rice. Soen Roshi looked down at his rice, and Genki Roshi said tears were running down his face. You know, basically, rice is Buddha. When you have purified body, mind, and heart, that tears running down his face, right? That's not trivial. That's how the world appears. Everything is my body. Everything is alive. Rice in a bowl, water in a pail. It's all, you know, it's all sacred. It's all Buddha for somebody who has purified body, mind, and heart. So this is the wonder and the amazing thing about Zazen. You know, I myself have, you know, I started doing Zen. It was so hard for me to get through half an hour of sitting. My legs were killing me. And I would be covered with sweat. But, you know, that feeling of purification is so amazing. It's kept me going. And, you know, things happen to me that are challenging and unpleasant. And I sit down on the cushion, and after three sits, you know, I get back to that place where it's a purified body, mind, and heart, and everything becomes Buddha, Buddha. So, you know, that would be the end of the story, except we live in a world where all these cities are on fire. See? So, you know, the story, the Guan Yin is a bodhisattva who achieved a great awakening and purified her senses. And the sense that allowed her to wake up, she woke up when she heard something. And she always taught, this bodhisattva taught that here you can wake up through the faculty of hearing. So actually some people actually wake up because of things they hear. That sounds, it's like you're working through your obstacles. There was a monk in China who had been training in Zen practice for 25 years. And he went to the Roshi, he went to the Shifu, and he said, look, I've been doing Zen for 25 years and I haven't had Daikensho, I quit. And the Shifu, the Roshi, said, okay, fine, that's fine. You know, keep practicing. So the guy had been a monk all his life, and he didn't have any skills that would make him hireable, employable. So he was living in this little hut, and he was growing his own vegetables and his own rice. And one day he was working in the garden, and he did continue to practice sitting. And one day he was working in the garden, and there was a broken piece of roof tile in the soil. And he took it and he threw it across the yard, and it hit a stalk of bamboo. And when it hit that stalk of bamboo, it made like a thud or a ping. He had his Daikensho. Many people have had Daikensho through the faculty of hearing. Kanon, Guanyin, Avalokiteshvara, woke up through the faculty of hearing, according to Buddha's teaching. And she purified body, mind, and heart. And so her hearing was hearing with the Buddha's ears. See, hearing with the Buddha's ears. But when you hear with the Buddha's ears, what do you hear? Well, you hear the birds. You hear the happy laughter of children. You hear the wind blowing through the trees, but you also hear the cries of people suffering. And so Bodhisattva Guan Yin heard the cry, you know, with her perfect hearing, she understood all of this is part of the same thing, right? Yes, the beautiful birds singing, the wind in the trees, and the human suffering. I must do something about this suffering, see. I must take my enlightened mind and act to help all beings. So the verses that we recite actually the verses we recite say, if anyone who embraces the name of the regarder of the cries of the world, if anyone embraces the name of Guan Yin Bodhisattva, Guan Yin Bosa, falls, if anyone embraces the name and falls into the fire, that fire will not burn that person. If anyone is carried away by a flood and he calls Guan Yin's name, that person will immediately reach the shallows. If there are hundreds of thousands of billions of beings in search of gold, silver, lapis lazuli, seashell, agate, coral, amber, pearls, and other treasures, and they go out to sea, and their ships are blown off course by a fierce wind to the land of ogre demons, and if among them there is one person who calls the name of Guan Yin Bosa, Tanan Bosatsu, all those people will be saved from difficulties caused by ogres, okay. Koan goes on to enumerate all of these disasters that befall people. And it says that no matter what disaster befalls you, if you just call the name of Kanon, Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin Bosa, that person, you will be saved. Now, you know, we could say that is a giant lie, right? That is a gigantic lie. What a ridiculous sutra, right? Certainly it's possible to think that way. But you know, what the sutra is really saying two things. You know, I think it's saying that in yourself, there is a Guanyin who is coming to your rescue all the time. In your mind, at the core of your mind, there is a Guanyin coming to your rescue all the time. And you need to find that Guanyin. She's there all the time. You need to find her. And how do we in Zen find Guanyin? We sit down on the cushion and we enter into Di Wuxin. And we begin to confront our obstacles head on, right, using our koans. And as we work through, you know, when you are working with a koan, all of this sadness, all of this difficulty, all of this pain and suffering can arise, and it can seem to be impossible for it to go away. You know, but then, you know, through the power of emptiness, it dissolves and suddenly you feel this wonderful clearing. It's like, you know, a couple of mornings ago, every day was sticky and clammy and foggy. And today it's like this beautiful clearing. It's like coming, when you come through your koan, you come out on the other end. And it's like that, it's like a clearing. And how is that possible? There's something in us which is coming to our rescue at all times. We say Buddha nature, but we could also say Guanyin, Bosatsu, Kanon, Bosatsu, right? Guanyin, Bosa, Kanon, Bosatsu, right? That's another name for your Buddha nature. It's the Buddha nature in you that is always there to help you, to help you. You are never helpless. And it's because there is, you could say, something in yourself that is deeply compassionate and enlightened. And you have this innate wisdom, and we Zen people call upon it when we enter deep wuxin, right? And, you know, when you're in the depths of day three of sesshin or day four of sesshin, and your legs are screaming and you're exhausted and you have to take a pee and you can't get up and take a pee. You know, you think, this is it. I'm at the limits. And then something, it's happened to me again and again, right? It's like, I'll get to that place where I think, this is it. I can't do this. And then I'll sit down and the next sit, it's like, bam. It's suddenly the clearing, you know? If you've stuck around for a couple of years in Zen, I'm sure you've had that experience. And it's far from trivial. You know, when you sit down on the cushion, you begin to encounter everything. I would like to suggest that everything people believe about reality is upside down. It's wrong. You know, what we think of a human being is wrong. And obviously our society is very screwed up. I would say our educational system is screwed up. When we practice Zen, in spite of everything we've been told, we encounter Buddha in ourselves. We encounter Buddha nature in ourselves. And at first, you know, we're so cynical, you know, and so frightened that, you know, it's hard to appreciate what is happening to us. But if you keep practicing, you know, your heart will be filled with gratitude because this is such an amazing thing. So, you know, and the compassion that you learn to feel for yourself, you see everywhere around you. Once you have discovered that compassion in yourself, you see it everywhere around you. So, in the koan, sutra, after we're told these stories of Bodhisattva, if you're a seaman and your boat is going down and you just say, Guan Yin, help me, you'll be helped. And if you're in a fire and you're in a flood and you're drowning, you say, Guan Yin, help me, you will be rescued. And then the sutra goes on and it says, not only that, but Guan Yin can take many different forms, right? Guan Yin appears to human beings in many guises as is necessary. So probably the greatest Zen master of the last 200 years was Shuyun. And Shuyun was on his way to a temple in the mountains and he got lost in a snowstorm. And he was really worried that he was going to freeze to death. And in the middle of nowhere, this old man appeared and said, oh, I'll take you to the temple. And it was one of these stories. You know, Shuyun said, he took me to the temple. I turned around to thank him and he was gone. And Shuyun said, it was Guan Yin. It was Guan Yin. Well, there are many Guan Yin. Guan Yin appears in many forms. It says, for those who need somebody in the body of Indra in order to be saved, Guan Yin appears as Indra and teaches them the path to liberation. For those who need someone in the body of Ishvara in order to be saved, he appears as Ishvara and teaches the path to liberation. For those who need someone in the body of an ordinary person to be saved, she appears as an ordinary person. For those who need someone in the body of a high official in order to be liberated, she appears as a high official, and so on and so on. So, you know, again, you can say, well, that's ridiculous. You know, I don't believe that Guan Yin appeared and helped Shuyun. But, you know, you meet Guan Yin every day. You know, there's a person in my community who, during this whole thing, has been organizing, basically a program for children, food program for children. And that person doesn't know it, but that person is an embodiment, an incarnation of Guan Yin. That person has found in himself this boundless compassion and is acting from it. Maybe not always, that person's not always acting from it, but on this occasion, that person, you could say, has become Guan Yin, has become Kan On. So basically, you know, the teaching of the Lotus Sutra is that, you know, in all of us, there is something that is trying to help us. You know, I've talked about this before, but one of my favorite Zen teachers is a woman named Jiyu Kennett. And she was a sort of rebel in England. She wanted to become an Episcopal priest. And she went to the Episcopal, actually they're called Anglicans in England, the Anglican priest. She went to the Anglican authorities and said, I want to study to be a priest. And they said, you can't do that, you're a woman. And she fought and she fought and she finally got to be ordained as an Anglican priest. But then she was unhappy in some ways being an Anglican priest and she read about Buddhism and she wanted to go to Zen, to Japan and study Zen. So she found this very liberal Roshi in Japan who made a place for her at the temple and allowed her to train as an unsui, a monk. But the environment in the temple was very hostile to her because she was an English person and also she was a woman. And it was very sexist environment. teacher was liberal, but the monks were idiots, basically. And they would screw her up all the time. So, for example, you know, somebody would say, "Don't worry, I'll wake you up at 4 o'clock so you can come down and recite the sutras." See, and then they wouldn't wake her up, and she'd wake up at 5 o'clock or 5:30, and she'd run down, and the sutra ceremony was already ending, and the temple boss would think, "Oh man, she's washing out already." See, or somebody would say, "Here's how to rake the gravel here in front of the tea house," and she'd rake the gravel, and then somebody else would come by and say, "What are you doing? That's not how we rake the gravel." So she was always doing things wrong because people were trying to trip her up. And she got so discouraged that she went to see the Roshi. And she said, "You know, everybody's against me here." And the Roshi said, "No, everything is helping you wake up. Everything is helping you wake up." That's another, I would put it a little differently. In you, there is something that is always trying to come to your rescue. And, you know, you can say the name Ganon, Ganon, Kanon, 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 you know, or you can recite lines from the Lotus Sutra. But what really happens when you recite those lines from the Lotus Sutra over and over and over again is that you go into deep samadhi, you begin to enter deep mushin. And when you enter deep mushin, you begin to activate your enlightened mind, your naturally, the guan yin, the kanon in you. By now it should be clear that you yourself are kanon. You yourself are the bodhisattva of compassion. And you can say, "Well, I don't feel like the bodhisattva of compassion." And I would say, please keep meditating. Please keep practicing. But, you know, for a person who has become one with his inner kanon, his inner kuan yin, helping people, helping others is no longer a work, a task. You know, it's possible to do something and think, "Boy, am I a good person." That's not how Guan Yin thinks, right? It's possible to do something and go, "Okay, I'll do it." We all do that, right? We say, "I know this is the right thing to do, but man, I hate to do it." Right? That's human. But when we're at our most joyous, when we're most in touch with the Guan Yin in ourselves, yes? You know, helping others is like, it's like scratching the back of our own head, see? It's taking care of others is taking care of ourselves. There's the distinction has disappeared. How are my hands like the Buddha's hands? Feeling for the pillow at the back of my head, I gave involuntarily a loud laugh to find that my entire body was all hand. My entire body is a helping hand. My entire life is a helping hand. There's a wonderful story from another tradition, from Sufism. There was a man named Nasruddin. And Nasruddin was, in their practice, deeply awake person. And he was walking down the street with somebody, and there was a beggar on the street. And you probably have heard this story, but, you know, Nasruddin was talking to this person about the Sufi path of cultivation, and his friend said, "Stop, stop." He said, "I don't believe in any of this stuff." He said, "Look, look at that poor beggar over there. You know, what kind of a God would permit that to happen?" And Nasruddin said, "Look, look, you don't get it. That's why God put you here, right? To help that guy." So that's another tradition and a different understanding. We believe that what they call God is our fundamental nature, our true nature. But, you know, a good friend of mine had this experience after, I think it was after sitting or after Sesshin. She was walking down the street and she looked over and she saw somebody's face, and she said it was the most amazing experience. She felt she was looking at her own face. See, that's deep. That's a deep encounter with our Buddha nature. Once we live from that place, everyone is my true self. Everyone is my true self. Everything is my body. So you're like, I'm caring for my body when I clean up a waterway. I'm caring for my body when I, you know, don't use pesticides in my lawn, you know, and so on and so on. Every act that comes from identification with others and the world is the spirit of Zen, the spirit of Zen. So we will wrap things up today at 6. We will have sitting again after lunch at 2:30, and then sitting after afternoon sutras, and we will continue to sit and do Dokusan until 6. So there are still many hours to untie our ropes. And so please keep practicing with the wonderful diligence I saw this morning.